Chapter 10. Entering Highest Tantric Practice. The Vajra Body and Resident Mind. According to Highest Yoga Tantra, our body and mind exist not only on the gross level we are normally familiar with, but also on subtle levels about which most of us are completely unaware. Our ordinary physical form, composed of various material elements, is subject to the inevitable sufferings of sickness, decay, and death. Merely possessing it binds us to the recurring miseries of our ordinary existence. But within the boundaries or atmosphere of this body is another, far more subtle body, the so-called Vajra body. Vajra having the connotation of indestructible. Just as our gross and perishable physical body is pervaded by the ordinary nervous system, this subtle Vajra body is pervaded by thousands of channels, nadi, through which flow the energy winds, prana, and drops, bindu, that are the sources of the bliss so vital to highest tantric practice. As is true of our essentially pure and blissful mind, this subtle conscious body exists within us right at the present moment. And the job of the tantric practitioner is to discover and make use of it. Once we have made contact with this clear, conscious body of light through meditation, our gross physical body will no longer be a problem for us, and we will have transcended it. Physical limitations are just another symptom of ego grasping, and once we merge with our essentially pure nature, all such restrictions will be overcome. At that point, the attainment of the radiant light body of the deity ceases to be merely a visualized goal and becomes a reality. This is not the place to discuss the Vajra body and its channels, winds, and drops in detail, but it will be helpful to mention the central channel, Avaduti, or Sushumna, at least briefly because it is of particular importance. This channel runs in a straight line from the crown of our head down to an area in front of the base of our spine, and along it are several focus points known as chakras, or energy wheels. Each one serves a different function in the practice of Tantra. Depending upon which Tantra we are following and which stage or function we are focusing upon in our meditation, we turn our concentrated attention toward and penetrate a particular center. It is not a matter of guessing which center to choose. These things are described in precise detail in the tantric texts and their commentaries, and are explained to the qualified practitioner by the spiritual guide. The most important chakra, however, is the one located at the level of the heart. For the heart chakra is the home of our very subtle mind, the priceless treasure of all tantric practitioners. This very subtle mind has been with us from conception. In fact, together with its supporting energy wind, the continuum of this mind has been with us for lifetimes without beginning. As the fundamental consciousness abiding at our heart center throughout this life, the very subtle mind is sometimes referred to as our resident mind. However, although it has flowed continuously from life to life, it has rarely had the opportunity to function. What prevents it from becoming activated and from performing its most valued function, penetrating the universal nature of reality, is the continual arising of our numerous gross states of mind. These are like tourists, temporary visitors who come and go in constant movement, and they completely overwhelm the stationary resident mind. The activity of all types of mind, both gross and subtle, depends upon their supporting energy winds and upon where these winds are traveling. As long as they flow through any of the thousands of channels other than the central one, these winds activate the gross tourist mind that repeatedly give rise to superstition and confusion, our ordinary life experiences. But when these winds enter, abide, and dissolve into the central channel, as happens naturally at the time of death, for example, these gross minds subside, and the very subtle mind of clear light arises instead. With the dissolution of the energy winds into the central channel, the environment in which our gross minds normally function automatically disappears, The tourist department is closed, and our superstitious thoughts can no longer come and go. In the resulting quietness, our original fundamental consciousness, the resident mind, awakens. This entire process happens automatically during the death process, but very few people are trained to take advantage of the very subtle clear light consciousness that arises at that critical time. In fact, few people even recognize it. But the tantric yogi and yogini train themselves not merely to recognize this blissful consciousness at the time of death, but to awaken this penetrating clear light mind during their life in meditation, thereby gaining complete control over it. By cultivating a profound concentration on the Vajra body in general, and upon the central channel in particular, they are able to cut through the gross levels of mental functioning and make contact with their original mind. They can use this powerfully concentrated mind to meditate on the emptiness of self-existence and penetrate the ultimate nature of reality, thereby freeing themselves of all delusions. At the same time that this total absorption into the clear space of non-duality takes place, they experience an explosion of indescribably blissful energy. The unity of great bliss and the simultaneous comprehension of emptiness, the tantric experience known as Mahamudra, the Great Seal, is the quickest path to full enlightenment. Changing our view of death. The dissolution of our Vajra body's energy winds into the central channel is crucial to advanced tantric practice. And because this dissolution takes place naturally when we die, we should become as familiar as possible now with the process of death. Many of us, however, have a great reluctance to examine or even think about death. We are frightened and find the whole subject extremely distasteful. But it is essential for us to know how our mind operates, not only during the day, but while we sleep and at the time of death as well. And this requires educating ourselves about things that we have often avoided up until now. If we examine these matters, we will find that death, instead of being a horrifying black hole that is waiting to suck us in and devour us, is a potential source of great comfort and even joy. We generally think that dying is somehow negative, but this is just our projection. In fact, dying can be a lot better than the experiences we ordinarily think of as pleasurable, because these ordinary experiences cannot give us tremendous bliss and peace. A beautiful flower, say, can give us something, but not the extraordinary bliss and peace that the death experience can. A boyfriend or girlfriend may be able to give us a certain amount of pleasure or bliss, but cannot solve any of our fundamental problems. He or she can give only a temporary solution to some of our more superficial emotional problems. But at the time of death, all our emotional problems and all our anxiety end, as all the conflicting concepts of this and that naturally disappear into space. The way is open to experience extraordinary penetrative insight. What we have to realize, therefore, is that death is not a sudden and terrifying annihilation, but a gradual process during which our mind grows more and more fine and subtle. If we want to practice highest tantra, or even if we merely want to prepare for what we must all eventually encounter, we should become as familiar with this gradual process as we can now. If we wait until the moment of death itself, it will be too late. Death, intermediate state, and rebirth. The Sutra and Tantra teachings diagnose the problem of cyclic existence in different ways, and also offer different solutions to these problems. According to Sutra, the root of samsaric suffering is ego grasping, the wrong view that holds on to a mistaken belief in a self-existent I, or ego identity. The antidote for this ignorant conception is found by cultivating a completely opposite view. Instead of ignorantly assenting to our instinctive belief in self-existence, we are taught how to generate an insight into emptiness, the total negation of all notions of independent self-existence. Thus, in Sutra, much emphasis is placed on removing our wrong view and replacing it with the opposing correct view. While the lightning path of Tantra does not deny what Sutra has to say, it offers a different, more radical approach to the problems of our life. According to these more advanced teachings, all difficulties are rooted in our ordinary uncontrolled experiences of death and what happens after death. By dying in an uncontrolled manner, we are forced to enter an uncontrolled intermediate state, bardo. And from there, we experience uncontrolled rebirth, leading to yet another uncontrolled life and death. In this way, the wheel keeps spinning, dragging us from one unsatisfactory state of existence to another. It should be emphasized again that death is anything but a problem. It is a precious opportunity. For the person who is well prepared, the dying process offers an unequaled opportunity to experience what he or she has always been searching for, the subtle, penetrating, and supremely blissful mind of clear light. However, although such a blissful mind arises automatically during the death process, most of us are unable to take any advantage of it at all. Our death, like our life, goes by without conscious, clear-minded control. And what could have been the gateway to liberation becomes instead a passage into yet another lifetime of confusion. The cure for such uncontrollably recurring confusion is a type of meditation in which we transform our ordinary experiences of death, bardo, and rebirth into the enlightened experience of a Buddha. The tantric antidote, therefore, is not something that is the opposite of the problem. The way that the wisdom of emptiness is the opposite of the ignorance of ego-grasping, but rather something that is similar to it. Because the cure is similar to the disease, forces that ordinarily lead to confusion and suffering can be used to bring about clarity and self-fulfillment instead. This is one of the reasons why Tantra is such a speedy and, if practiced incorrectly, dangerous path. The three aspects of Buddhahood. In order to understand how Tantra handles the problems of death, bardo, and rebirth, we need to know something about the three so-called bodies, kaya, of a Buddha. When all the veils currently obscuring our mind have been removed, and when all of our positive potentials have been developed to their utmost, there is the simultaneous achievement of the truth body, dharmakaya, enjoyment body, sambhogakaya, and emanation body, nirmanakaya, of a Buddha. The Dharmakaya is the unlimited and unobstructed mind of an enlightened being, while the remaining bodies are the two levels on which this mind manifests itself in order to benefit others. It is said that the Dharmakaya represents the accomplishment of one's own purpose through the attainment of unexcelled qualities of mind, while the Sambhogakaya and Nirmanakaya represent the accomplishment of others' purpose through a Buddha's spontaneous manifestation in forms to which unenlightened beings can relate. The experience of these three kayas is the experience of total enlightenment. As unenlightened beings, we do not have this experience yet, but we can have something similar to it. It is not only true that we can have it, but according to the resultant path of Tantra, we should have it. Such an ambitious attitude accords well with an attitude prevalent in the West. I want the best and I want it right now. The difference is that ordinarily we are striving mainly after material things. But when we practice Tantra, we are seeking to bring the blissful experience of full conscious control over every aspect of our life into our present reality. Taking advantage of our human form. Turning the experience of death, bardo, and rebirth into the path to enlightenment is not a fantasy. Because we have the type of body we do, we can definitely accomplish this great aim. According to the Sutra teachings, our present physical body is viewed largely as a hindrance. It is decaying from moment to moment, prone to sickness, and attracts misery in the way a magnet attracts pieces of iron. In fact, the most sufficient way of defining the first noble truth of suffering is to say it is the body itself. But the tantric teachings take the opposite view. Far from being a hindrance or obstacle, the human body is regarded as something most precious because it contains all the necessary equipment for reaching enlightenment in one lifetime. It is made up of the four elements of earth, water, fire, and air, and the energies, prana, associated with them. And because it is born from the womb, it contains the red and white drops, from the mother and father respectively, needed for arousing the blissful energy of the Kundalini experience. We are fortunate to have this type of body and should not waste the precious opportunity it gives us to realize our full potential. We should not be like those people who do not know how to use their natural resources properly. For example, I know of some Nepalese farmers who cut down mango trees for firewood. It takes so many years for a mango tree to grow, and its fruit is so precious, but these people do not seem to appreciate this. Instead of making good use of what they have, they destroy these precious trees, lose their land through erosion, and are left with nothing. If we neglect to use our body's precious energy for the attainment of enlightenment, and squander it instead on the meaningless pursuits of this life, then we are far more ignorant than those farmers. Rather, we should be like those ingenious scientists who know how to extract energy from everything, from sunlight, the tides, wind, and so forth, and who also know how to put this energy to constructive use. In other words, we should be skillful. And the highest skill involves transforming our present body from a source of pain and dissatisfaction into the blissful path to unsurpassed happiness for ourselves and others. This is the ultimate goal of all tantric practice. The process of dying. When the totality of one's enlightened nature is realized, the Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya are achieved simultaneously. But in terms of tantric practice, these three kayas, or bodies, gradually evolve in a sequence mirroring the natural unfolding of death, the intermediate state, and rebirth. So, as was indicated earlier, first we should understand how the process of death and so forth ordinarily occurs. Then we can understand how they are transformed into the three bodies of enlightenment. Death is the separation of the mind from the body. This separation may take place over several hours or days, as is generally the case in a death from natural causes, or it may happen rather more suddenly, as in an accident. But in either case, there are certain definite stages in the dying process. The body does not lose its ability to maintain consciousness all at once, but does so gradually with each element of the body, earth, water, fire, and air, losing its supportive ability in turn. The tantric texts dealing with the dying process describe the first four stages of death in vivid terms. They say that first, the earth element sinks, or dissolves, into the water element, and that then the water element sinks into the fire, and fire into the air, and the air element into consciousness itself. Such a description is useful for meditation, but should not be taken literally. For example, when it is said that the earth element sinks into the water element, this means that as the solid portions of the body are gradually losing their ability to function and are becoming less intimately interconnected with the dying person's mind, the liquid elements appear stronger and more evident. As these various physical elements become stronger and weaker in turn, the dying person experiences certain external and internal signs associated with each stage of the dissolution process. As these signs are listed in great detail in other texts, it is not necessary to mention them all here. However, it will be helpful to point out some of the visions that typically occur. When ordinary people die, they are out of control. Because they have not trained themselves during their life, they are overwhelmed by the experience of death and bewildered as their bodily elements go out of balance and cease functioning harmoniously. It seems to them as if they were in the middle of a violent earthquake, and it is therefore very difficult, if not impossible, for them to remain calmly aware of what is happening. Death is thus experienced as a series of frightening hallucinations, a nightmarish disaster. Yet for someone who is prepared, the same visions that cause panic in others can bring an extraordinary peace. And for those advanced practitioners who have trained their minds well, each stage of the dissolution process brings ever-increasing clarity and insight. According to Buddhist psychology, whether an object brings satisfaction or not depends upon a decision made beforehand by your consciousness. Even before you see a particular thing, your mind has already decided, "This will make me happy." Then, when you actually connect it with your eyesight, you think, "Oh, this is very nice." The same is true for a negative reaction. If your consciousness has already decided that you do not like a certain person, Then, when you actually meet him, you will see nothing but an unpleasant person. In other words, all the seemingly real good things that we like and bad things that we dislike are, in fact, creations of our own mind. How is all of this related to our death experiences? Buddhism teaches that the way to experience both a happy life and a happy death is by recognizing exactly what is happening without being misled and confused by appearances. During our life, we experience one dissatisfaction after another because we mistakenly believe that what appears to us as good or bad truly exists in this way. We therefore spend all our time and energy running after this and away from that. During our lifetime, we build up such a strong habit of relating to things in this alternatingly greedy and fearful way that it is only to be expected that at the time of our death, when everything seems to be falling apart, we will be overwhelmed by great confusion. The solution is to learn to see all things as mere appearances to the mind, as lacking even one atom of independent self-existence. We need to understand that, in this respect, all things are like illusions. The same understanding should be applied to the visions that appear one after the other, as our consciousness goes through the dying process. We should become familiar with what to expect when we die, so that we can deal with these illusions instead of being overwhelmed and confused by them. The key during both life and death is to recognize illusions as illusions, projections as projections, and fantasies as fantasies. In this way, we become free. Death and Dharmakaya. First of all, let us consider what might happen to us if, totally untrained and unprepared, we were to die in a state of great anxiety and bewilderment. Desperately holding on tightly to a supposedly solid sense of I for security, we panic as the basis of our ego identity, our body itself, begins to disintegrate. As the earth element of our body deteriorates and the water element seems to grow stronger, our mind is filled with the hallucination of a shimmering silver-blue mirage. We feel trapped and suffocated, as if our body were buried in the earth or caught in an avalanche. Then the water element sinks into the fire element, and a vision of swirling smoke appears. As this is happening, we may feel as if we are drowning or being carried away by violent currents of water. Next, the fire element dissolves, and our body gradually grows colder. We perceive a vision like that of sparks dancing over an open fire at night. During this process, some dying people cry out, thinking that their body is being consumed by flames. Finally, the air element dissolves. Our breathing grows shallow, and we may feel that we are being blown about like a leaf in the wind. Along with this experience comes the vision of a dying flame in a darkened room. As is the case when a candle is about to go out, the flame suddenly grows brighter, as if exploding in a final burst of energy. Our breathing, which has been getting more and more difficult, now comes to a complete halt. To the outside world, we now seem to be dead, and this is often the signal for those gathered around us to burst into tears. But we are not dead yet. The four gross elements and the conceptual minds associated with them have ceased to function, but there remain subtle levels of consciousness still to be absorbed. This happens as the subtle white drop received from our Father at conception and located during our life at the crown of our head, and the red drop received from our Mother and located at our navel, come toward each other and eventually meet at the level of our heart. As the white drop descends, we perceive a vision of empty space pervaded by whiteness. And as the red drop rises, we perceive a similar vision of empty space, this time pervaded by redness. Finally, the two drops meet, forming a sphere enclosing our very subtle, fundamental consciousness and its associated wind at our heart, and we experience the blackness of a completely darkened room. This darkness becomes blacker and blacker until we eventually fall into total unconsciousness. But still, we are not dead. Within this sphere at our heart center resides our very subtle consciousness and its associated subtle energy wind. As the encircling drop absorbs, this very subtle mind awakens. Nothing appears to it but the vision of empty space, clear and luminous. This clear light consciousness is the last and most subtle of all the states of mind experienced during this lifetime. After some time, which can be as long as 3 days, even for an untrained person, the sphere opens and our mind finally departs the body. For an ordinary person, all these absorptions, from the appearance of the mirage-like vision to the dawning of the clear light, are uncontrolled. They happen one after the other, but we are barely conscious of them. Our mind is too confused and distracted. But those who have trained themselves well beforehand maintain clear awareness of everything that is happening during this process. They know which vision will come next, and understand that everything they are perceiving is merely an appearance to their dying mind, empty of all independent self-existence as something truly out there. Because of this understanding, they are not frightened by what they see. Instead, as their mind grows more and more subtle, their awareness of the emptiness of true existence becomes more and more penetrating. Finally, with the arising of the clear light, this very subtle mind mixes indistinguishably with emptiness in an experience of inexpressible bliss. For such a person, death has become the precious opportunity for perfecting the wisdom of non-duality. By means of this clear and unobstructed wisdom, the trained practitioner has transformed the ordinary death process into the enlightened Dharmakaya experience. The Dharmakaya experience of non-duality is beyond words, beyond expression, beyond concepts. When someone speaks about this experience, therefore, there is always the danger of being misinterpreted. So you should not trust my words. They are only the false words of my superstition. No matter how skillful they may be, words still come from the limited conceptual mind and are understood by the same limited mind. What is necessary is to touch the experience itself and thus go beyond the words used to describe it. That is why Tantra puts such emphasis upon action rather than theory. Although it is a good thing to study the various Buddhist texts and commentaries and learn to analyze them with a sharp and critical intelligence, we should understand that there are times when this analytical approach is actually harmful. One of my meditation masters once told me, "At a certain point, you have to abandon the philosophical way of understanding things. You must go beyond debate, beyond argument." That shocked me. I was a young, enthusiastic student at the time and liked to analyze and criticize everything I heard. But I eventually understood what he meant. Remaining caught up in intellectual preconceptions can prevent us from entering profound meditational experiences. So it is important to know when to relax, let go, and allow the mind to settle into its natural state of clarity. Truly qualified masters of all traditions always stress that there are certain times when you should not be doing analytical or intellectual activity at all. For instance, it would be a great mistake to engage in analytical thought during the advanced completion stage practices of highest yoga tantra. Why? Because when you use your intellect, it is natural for all sorts of superstitious concepts to arise. Your mind becomes overly busy and vibrates with the fragmented energy of such concepts. Then, since every state of mind is associated with its own wind energy, your subtle nervous system will also become busy vibrating with various conflicting wind energies. This not only interferes with the control you are trying to gain over your nervous system through these completion stage practices, but it can also easily lead to a painful condition the Tibetans call lung, meaning frustrated energy at the heart. As with all aspects of the spiritual path, there is a time to use the intellect, and there is a time to put it aside. Bardo and Sambhogakaya. For ordinary people, once the clear light is finished, The mind experiences the visions of the Dharmakaya experience, just described, but in a reverse order. From the darkness of unconsciousness to the mirage-like vision, with the beginning of this reverse process, our mind departs from our body and death actually occurs. Immediately thereafter, we enter the intermediate state, the bardo, and here again our mind is completely out of control. With the speed of thought, we are propelled from one situation to another, as in a dream, but this dream is more often a nightmare. Sometimes terrifying visions, arising from the imprint of our past delusions and negative actions, appear and cause us to run away in fear. At other times, alluring visions arise, and we run after them with intense craving, only to be disappointed. This is what happened, after all, when we were still alive and possessed an ordinary physical body. Our life was spent in a constant search for security, running away from this and after that. But now our situation is even more extreme. Because our insubstantial bardo body is made of nothing but subtle wind energy, it can pass through matter without any obstruction, and therefore we enter without hindrance into whatever situation our fearful, craving mind throws us. This is the ordinary bardo experience, but once again, trained practitioners can transform it into the path to enlightenment. Well-versed in the practices of the rainbow-like illusory body, once the clear light of death comes to an end, they assume a clear, radiant body of light instead of the deluded bardo body. In this way, they transform the ordinary bardo into the enlightened Sambhogakaya, or enjoyment body, experience. Rebirth and Nirmanakaya. Just as the ordinary process of death and bardo are uncontrolled, compelled by the force of our deluded grasping, so too is our ordinary rebirth. We are eventually blown by the winds of our deluded actions, karma, to where our future parents lie in sexual embrace. There, with our mind experiencing a confused mixture of longing, desire, and repulsion, we faint and are thereafter conceived in our mother's womb. From this impure beginning, a life full of impurity and suffering follows. Our body, deriving from the sperm and egg of our parents, is subject to the miseries of birth, sickness, aging, and eventually death, while our mind, as a stream flowing from our previous life, continues under the compulsion of insecure craving, repulsion, and ignorance to create the causes for further dissatisfaction and suffering. This ordinary rebirth experience can be transformed by the skilled practitioner in the same way that death and bardo were transformed. Instead of moving from the bardo to the next life, under the force of insecurity and grasping, ignorantly falling into unconsciousness, the well-trained followers of Tantra can choose their rebirth consciously, having trained themselves in the practice of overcoming ordinary appearances. They can see their future parents as male and female deities, and themselves as a deity as well. Depending on their level of control and the type of training they have completed, they may even take rebirth in a pure land, a state of existence in which everything is conducive to the attainment of enlightenment. Even if they are born on this earth, they can choose a situation suitable to spiritual development so that they can continue to practice until the totality of enlightenment is reached. With such full awareness and complete control over their next life, ordinary rebirth can be transformed into the enlightened experience of the Nirmanakaya, or emanation body. This has been only a brief account of the way the tantric practitioners can transform ordinary death, bardo, and rebirth into the three bodies of an enlightened being. But it is enough to give us a clear idea of what lies at the heart of the highest tantric practice. Up until now, we have been overwhelmed by the forces of ignorance, karma, and our many delusions, with the result that we have been going around in a circle of birth, death, and rebirth without choice or control over and over again. Until we replace our ignorance with wisdom and transform these three recurring events into the enlightened experience of a Buddha, we will continue going around in this vicious circle forever, searching for happiness, but finding only disappointment. Cutting rebirth. It is not difficult to understand how ordinary death, bardo, and rebirth experiences are the root of our difficulties. Because we live, die, and are reborn with an uncontrolled mind and body, we have to experience the many mental and physical sufferings of ordinary life. Stated simply, if we were not born in the first place, there would be no way for these problems to arise. Through the practice of highest tantra, we can avoid such a birth and all its problems completely. Some people might be confused when hearing that the proper practice of tantra can cut rebirth. What is the point of this? Why should I give up the chance to return to the world? Is this what the path is leading me to? Total non-existence? If so, I am not interested. To avoid this confusion, we should realize that cutting rebirth has a very specific meaning, namely, to free ourselves from having to experience uncontrolled rebirth again and again. We can practice Tantra successfully and still return to this world. In fact, our compassionate bodhicitta motivation makes it unthinkable that we would abandon others. It pledges us to return for their sake. Shakyamuni Buddha himself did so, and his birth, far from being a problem, was the source of limitless benefit. At the moment, however, our rebirths take place without control and merely perpetuate the beginningless cycle of misery. This is what needs to be cut. The same is true for death and bardo. It is the uncontrolled experience of these events that must be eliminated and transformed. Our uncontrolled life, in which the three poisons of attachment, anger, and ignorance play such a big part, leads inevitably to an uncontrolled death, during which these same delusions give rise to even greater confusion. Our mind is overwhelmed by the hallucinations associated with the dissolution of the various bodily elements, and we enter the intermediate state with tremendous fear and longing. There, because we possess a body of consciousness rather than one of gross physical form, our superstitions have an even stronger effect upon us. Each delusion that surfaces in our mind immediately throws us into a correspondingly deluded situation. This is an extremely frightening condition, and eventually, when we perceive the vision of our future parents, our longing for security propels us to take rebirth. And the cycle begins again. Nowhere is there any rest or peace, as the security and happiness we seek always elude us. This is the symptom of our ordinary samsaric existence. The aim of tantric practice is to free ourselves from the recurring difficulties by helping us to break out of this vicious cycle, by training our mind to overcome the tyranny of ordinary, deluded appearances, and by preparing beforehand for what we must eventually encounter as one life draws to an end and another begins. We are generating the ability to substitute the enlightened experience of the three bodies of a Buddha for the usual confusion of death, bardo, and rebirth.